Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. The documentary Maiden is coming to Chicago theaters next month. It's the groundbreaking story of Tracy Edwards and her all-female crew aboard the Maiden in the 1989 Whitbread Round the World yacht race.
For me, sailing was about freedom. It was freedom of everything. It was leaving everything behind. My father died when I was 10. My parents instilled in me a sense of determination.
So when I heard about
the Whitbread Round the World race, it was just something I had to do. Sailing at that time was very male-dominated. There were just no women anywhere in it.
The Whitbread Round the World race at 33,000 miles is the longest and most challenging on Earth.
I wanted to be part of this. I remember going to the skipper and he went, "We're not going to be the only racing team in the world with a girl." And that's when I made the decision to put an all-female crew into the race.
The film looks not only at that legendary moment, but also captures how the sailing community was not immune to sexism and misogyny. The guys didn't even try to hide it. But Tracy was determined, and she persevered, and she made history. The film uses footage from the actual race in 1989, everything from navigating the frigid and dangerous South Seas to the infamous moment where the crew sailed into Fort Lauderdale wearing bathing suits. Paparazzi had a field day with that, and that photo became one of the most popular of its time. But this is not a film that just celebrates pop culture moments. It shows a crew of young women coming together to not only take on the grueling task of sailing around the world, but they changed the sport forever. The skipper and star of this film, Tracy Edwards, my guest tonight on Extension 720. Tracy, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
This film, and I really, really enjoyed it, and I love being able to see the footage from 1989. Where does it come from? Was the goal always to make a film of this experience?
No, it really wasn't. Looking back, I don't know what we thought would happen to the footage. So I did the 85-86 race, and there's no record of it whatsoever. I had a little Instamatic, I took a couple of pictures, and that was about it. But the race committee at the time said, look, we'd like volunteers to take cameras on the boats, these newfangled cameras that you can, movie things that you can take on the boats. And of course, all the guys went, oh, no, we're far too serious and competitive to take cameras. And we went, we will. So they gave us a camera and we said, well, who's going to film? And Joe the cook said, well, I'm not doing a watch, so I'll film. So we sent her to the BBC for 4 days training. I mean, 4 days. And then she came back with this huge camera, which was almost bigger than her. I mean, Joe's not the biggest person in the world, but I think the really great thing we did before we left is we practiced. And what the guys did was they threw the cameras on the boat and they said, we'll deal with that later. But we practiced.
And it shows.
Oh, that makes
the film. The film is great and the narrative arc is great and it's really, truly a great documentary.
Well, that's down to Joe.
But the footage, being able to see how the crew reacted when you're sailing, when you're going the southernmost route in the South Seas, this moment where no one gets to see this stuff. And then to be able to see it, it was really breathtaking.
I think the great thing that Jo has is she has this amazing emotional intelligence, and the difference between the male interviews and the female footage was that all the stuff from the men's boats, because Alex took 2 years to find this footage. It was lost to the four winds. It was everywhere. And he said, they did find some stuff from the guys' boats, and it's very much, here we are, we're doing 12 knots, and it is day 12. And what Jo did was she just filmed us. Mm-hmm. And, I have to say that we did tell her to go away at some point when she had the camera in our face. But then I think she learned how to film subtly. We didn't notice we were being filmed.
Well, it's obvious. There's some great footage of you when you're in the navigation room and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do. And you can see the insecurity of the whole thing, of you telling your story 30 years later in this documentary and seeing how 30 years ago you are reacting in the actual footage. It really makes you, not too many chances in our lifetime to have that kind of experience.
Oh, I think it's pretty unique. And I think the really skillful thing that Alex did was, even though he'd found all the footage by the time he interviewed us, he didn't let us watch it. And so he didn't prime us at all. He just relied on our memories. And what he said afterwards was, he said, I have never found such a collective group of memories that are pretty much all the same, and that we all remember. We have different perspectives, sure, obviously, because you know, you've got the sailmaker thinking, don't break my sails. And then I'm thinking, please go in the right direction. And so we're all thinking of things from different points of view. But he said, factually, we had this astonishing recall and none of us thought we would have. I mean, we all said to Alex, I'm so sorry, but I don't think I remember that much. You know, 2 days later, I crawled out of that, you know, sort of studio going, I didn't realize I knew that much about what we'd done.
Well, to think about this being the 30-year anniversary of that race and the first all-female crew to go around the world in this race, obviously those memories are going to be strong for you because it was a big moment in your life, and there are parts in this film that you see how big of a moment it was for racing and for sailing, and just the end of the film when you see how people react to you guys coming in, not to give it away, but people remember in history. But there seems to be... You've lived this your entire life for 30 years. Is it an easy story to recall for you? Or when you got in the studio and you started talking to Alex, was it difficult to get the moments out?
Well, that's the interesting thing, you see, because Maiden has been a huge part of my life, and that I went on to do other all-female crews and the world's first mixed gender team and lots of other things. But Maiden is kind of the thing that created me as a person. And I thought I pretty much knew the whole story in my head. But when he really started to drill down and eke out the information out of me, I got a lot more emotional than I thought I was going to during the interview. In fact, I think I cried a number of times. But I think what he got to with all of us was how we did feel at the time. And none of us, I thought, really remembered that. And I was quite surprised when I admitted at how worried and scared and anxious I was. You know, I would never have admitted that at the time. Mm-hmm. And if you'd interviewed me straight afterward, I said, no, I would have said absolutely confident, always thought we could do it. And of course, I didn't always think we could do it. And that is the beauty, I think, of doing something that specific length of time after. And he did say 25 years after something is a great time to interview people because they've got stuff in their brain that they don't know and they're much more honest.
And they're also reflective of what they accomplished. For you, to look back at yourself in the film and to recognize the severity or just the avalanche that is the amount of press and the whole sailing community really putting their eyes, just focusing solely on you and the first all-female crew. When you see that footage, do you feel that pressure? Do you remember that pressure and what that was like?
I do. I think what surprised me, and actually we all said this, we all watched it together for the first time in June last year at BAFTA with a very nervous Alex Holmes hovering around in the background. And all of us said, I don't remember myself being like that. That's me. And for me, watching myself being so calm and eloquent about the project, I remember myself as being a bit of an idiot, a bit of a twit, you know, sort of just lurching from one situation to the next, rambling on. But I'm looking at that stuff and I'm thinking, wow, you were, for that age, actually quite together. And I don't remember myself being like that. But I do know that what was going on beneath that surface was turmoil and worry and doubt and fear and all the other things. And that's been really weird for me to watch, I have to say.
When you look back on it, too, the misogyny and the sexism, which was a big part, and you knew it at the time. There was even the swimsuit picture was what kind of fed into that. But to have the ability to look back 30 years and to recognize how serious those issues are to us now in 2019 and how maybe they weren't as serious back in 1989, did you recognize what was happening? Did you recognize that this was almost more of an obstacle than the race itself?
I think when I first wanted to do an all-female crew, I mean, I wanted to do it for quite selfish reasons. I wanted to navigate on a round-the-world race boat. So I actually created this project for me to be a navigator. And I knew people would say, oh, you can't do it. And that was fine. I expected that. What I didn't expect was this vociferous, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this, you will die. Not you might die, but you will die. So this outpouring of anger almost, mm-hmm. That surprised me. That's when I realized that, okay, I'm not doing this just to be a navigator, I'm doing this for women, for all women, we've got a battle to fight here. I didn't know we had a battle to fight here. But I think when we all realized that, we all jumped in with both feet, you know, we absolutely tackled it full on. But I think, okay, we had to fight to get to the start line, but that battle brought us together as a crew. So when we crossed that start line, we were already battle hardened. You know, we were ready to go out and, you know, get out there and do it.
Yeah, because the announcement for the race was a year or so, a couple years, right? So there was all sorts of press and all sorts of people saying, you can't do it. What are you doing? You can't do this. You can't find a boat. You can't get a sponsor, all that kind of stuff. So by the time the race happened, you had already gone through it all.
We had. And the thing is, I think we didn't let it get us down and we didn't actually listen to it that much. It was white noise. We sort of put that in the background there because it's not important what other mm-hmm. people think of us. Only the people that we care about, that's important. And I think, you know, that I distinctly remember these guys getting onto their brand new, sleeky, shiny racing yachts with their brand new crew gear, you know. And they'd literally turn up the day before with their bags and they get on this boat. And I'm thinking, how can you feel the way we feel about this race, you know? And so this disadvantage turned into a massive advantage. And people say, you know, there were only two crews that stayed together the whole way round. Steinlager, who won, and we came second. And that says all I think you need to know about this comradeship and this bond that you build beforehand.
It's great because in the film, it's a moment that obviously is really big in your life. And it's a big moment for sport and sailing as well. But it's also, I found myself, I was probably 15 at the time, an American kid living in Chicago. Not really paying attention to it, right? Not something that I kept getting mad at myself watching this film, saying, why am I not having recall to this story in America? This is an amazing story. And there was the Fort Lauderdale photo and Florida and the whole bit. But do you see it that way? Do you see it that there was obviously an intense moment for you and the sailing community and obviously the European countries involved, but that there was a whole big part of the world that wasn't paying attention?
I think that we had a brief moment when everyone went, oh, and then everyone went back, like, as you were, you know, so everyone went back to what they were doing. What I do think that we all took away from that was we all had to continue the fight, and we all did in our different ways. You know, I went on to do other projects. Dawn Riley, who is American from New York, she went on to do the first all-female America's Cup team and whipped Ted Turner.
Yeah, right.
Yes, and Dennis Connor. Woo! So, you know, we carried the battle quietly with us for the rest of our lives, and we continue.
What is the key? What is the key to being a great sailor when it comes to this race? Why have you had success over and over in your career where others who men or women who have tried things haven't?
I think that, okay, so I'm not a great sailor.
navigator? What would you say?
I think I'm a good navigator. I'm an average sailor. I have to work quite hard at being a good sailor. And I think that's actually my best quality because I understand my limitations. And someone once said to me, you know, when you're putting a team together, make sure you're the most stupid person in the room. And that's what I did. I picked people who were much better than me. And then I think, you know, there's also especially when you're sailing, you have a democracy on the boat where you're putting in your input and thoughts mm-hmm. and opinions, your training, your sailing. But when you cross the start line, it's a dictatorship. There is one person on the boat who gives the orders, and that's me, and that's it.
Is that hard to do when you surround yourself with people that are better than you?
No. If you invited these amazing people on the boat and said, right, you're going to do it my way, they wouldn't listen to you. And what we used to do, which no other male team did, was we would, when we had a team meeting, we would have different chairs of the meeting because we need to see the project from different points of view. So, you know, when Dawn was chairing the meeting and she's in charge of the water maker and the generator and the engine, she has certain, you know, sort of criteria.
Yeah.
When Tanya, who's in charge of the sales, runs the meeting, we're all thinking about things from her point of view and, well, I didn't think about that before. And, you know, so that worked like an absolute dream. So we all owned our different areas. We knew we'd all been listened to. Then when you cross the start line, you know that your input's in there somewhere, and every decision hopefully your skipper is going to make, which is me, is going to be the right one because I've been given all the right information.
I would be remiss not to ask about the South Seas. The footage in the trip from Uruguay to Australia, and you have to go pretty much through the Antarctic.
Yeah.
The footage is intense. Those waves look like, I don't even want to go near that stuff. I mean, it scares the living bejesus out of everybody. To be in that situation, to be in a race and to be in that sea for the first time, what are your memories of that? Beyond the film, but just that harrowing experience of facing life and death in the face.
Well, it's all about being human, really, and what human beings are capable of, because you don't just suddenly go from one ocean to another ocean. You start to experience, you know, so you go through the roaring 40s and, you know, the raging 50s and the screaming 60s before you get to the absolutely terrifying 70s. And so you are almost building up your immune system. Mm. And if you drop someone into the Southern Ocean, I mean, they die of fear, but you get this opportunity to sort of... And every day, something that you would have found scary, you go, okay, that's a 30-foot wave. That's fine. I can deal with that. And the wind speed goes up and up and up, and you just become part of your environment. Before you know it, you are totally... You're entrenched, you're engrossed in what you're doing. And yes, you have moments of fear. But interestingly, I had more moments of fear on Atlantic Privateer when I was the cook and surrounded by actually probably the best sailors in the world, because they are mavericks and they're pushing the envelope. And I know that there's an element of them that, you know, at one point we had the skipper standing up at the mast with a flare gun because we hadn't taken the spinnaker down in time, and he's going to shoot the spinnaker out if it gets too scary. And I'm like, oh my, what am I doing here?
Maybe there's a little bit of your maverick from that experience, even though you know, obviously much more buttoned up and professional, but you were a maverick in how you won that leg.
I think I was a risk taker. But then I'd learned from Atlantic Privateer, you choose your battles to fight and you choose the risks to take. So I wouldn't keep a spinnaker up that long. If we broach, I'm going to break something. If I break something, I'm going to not win the race. You know, so that's no good. But then I do think of the conversation about the icebergs, which now, I mean, just make me want to die, where we went, so what do you think the statistics are of hitting an iceberg? And I remember the conversation so clearly, and someone went, well, you know, if we were looking for an iceberg in the Southern Ocean, we wouldn't be able to find it. So I'm thinking it's like really a lot that you wouldn't bump into an iceberg. And I'm going, yeah, I think that's what, should we just go for it? And everyone went, yeah, let's just go for it. So that was our risk assessment.
Unbelievable. My final question for you, just as you know, as you say as a young Tracy in the film, that you're not a feminist, you know, that was a big part where you said, this is not something, I'm not a feminist, I'm not into feminism, I just want to equal shot at this. The Tracy now, do you agree with that sentiment? Do you agree with this from the Tracy in 1989?
No, I think that was a coward's reply. But then I was 23 years old, and feminism had such an awful, horrible connotation at that time. And I just want to be liked when I'm 23 years old. Please don't not like me. But now, the older you, I don't care what people think of you. What I do think is that there are so many younger women that don't have a voice. You know, I'm an old fart now. I can say what I like. And because of what I've done, people listen to me. So I think it is my absolute responsibility to be a feminist and to speak up and to shout out and to say to all the things that younger women who maybe are still in an environment where they can't speak up, you know, so I speak for them.
A fantastic film. The new documentary is called Maiden. It comes to Chicago theaters next month. It's about the all-female crew led by Tracy Edwards, the maiden in the 1989 Whitbread Round the World Yacht Race. Tracy, a pleasure to have you here. It's a great film, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much. Thank you.